What do you think, Katie? Is this the bird you heard this morning?
That's the bird I heard this morning when I woke up. And it's a
robin.
Yay. So according to Jennifer Barr, our membership coordinator here at the radio station, her grandpa told her that after you see the first robin, it will be snowed on three times. So what does it mean if I haven't seen one? But I know it's out there.
Mark Shepherd, have you ever heard anything like that?
I actually have, but being in southwestern Wisconsin, I was told two times. The 95-year-old guy across the street told me that, and he's been right. You know, that seems to be about right.
That's funny. Ever since Jennifer told me that, which was, 10 years ago, I think now, it's held true every year.
The person on the phone is Mark Shepherd, and he is the keynote speaker for this year's Iron Range Earth Fest, April 12th and 13th in Mountain Iron. He's also author of a book called Restoration Agriculture and founded New Forest Farm in Viola, Wisconsin. So welcome to Northern Community Radio, Mark.
Well, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So what does restoration agriculture mean?
Well, restoration agriculture is an intentional combination of two different phrases. One is restoration from ecological restoration, and the other obviously is from agriculture, which is the production of food. So many times we're told that you can't do ecological restoration. You know, if you do it, you have to take the land out of food production. Well, that's entirely not true, and it causes fights that don't need to happen. Is we can actually do ecological restoration on pieces of ground and produce food at the same time, and that's basically what I wrote about. One of the ways that we do that is we imitate a selection of the natural plant community types that belong in your area, plant them conveniently, so we can plant them mechanically, maintain them mechanically, harvest them mechanically, and then we treat them as a semi-natural, almost wild system, and we maintain everything by harvesting crop yields from it.
It sounds kind of wild. Is this the same as permaculture?
Well, it's not entirely. Permaculture is permanent agriculture, which is how I got into what I'm doing right now, is by attempting to design permanent agriculturally productive systems. And what I found out is the only permanent systems we know about on planet Earth are the dynamic systems of natural plant communities. No matter where you go on this planet, plants and animals live and survive with the conditions as they are. They don't require outside inputs, fertilizer, pesticides, fungicides, herbicides, etc. So I found myself as a permaculture designer, instead of inventing combinations of plants that grow well together, I would go out in nature and observe, these grow with that, grows with this, grows with that, and they grow wild in the ditch on the side of the road. Nobody does anything nice to it, and people go out and pick berries and fruits and nuts and mushrooms.
So what are the advantages of this system compared to how we mostly practice agriculture today?
Well, some of the advantages is that, you know, if you want to push the envelope, there's no outside inputs required whatsoever. New Forest Farm in southwest Wisconsin has been certified organic since 1995, I believe it is. And we haven't used any sprays, you know, not only just organic, but none whatsoever. We're relying solely on the natural pest and disease cycles and controls within the ecological system. And if you think about people who grow apples, if we were concerned that a new disease coming onto our apples was going to wipe out everything there, you know, we spray like crazy so we don't lose absolutely everything. Well, look at nature. It never loses absolutely everything. You may lose a lot of things that are susceptible to a particular disease, but the ones that survive are resistant to the disease. So you plant and or propagate the ones that are resistant, so you have naturally genetically resistant plants in your system. So we're using a lot of genetics and natural controls, ecological controls, to drive the system.
Mark Shepherd is the keynote speaker for Iron Range Earth Fest this weekend. Can you tell us a bit about New Forest Farm?
25 years ago, it was part abandoned cornfield and part overgrazed pasture. It's 110 acres, and our goal was to transition it to a perennial agricultural system. Our first order of business was to learn what the plant community types of the region were, and here it's the transition between oak savanna and northern hardwoods. So those are the two different plant community types that I chose to imitate. And so let's take oak savanna as an example. Oak savanna, the major perennial species are characterized by the Fagaceae, which are oak, chestnut, or beech as the overstory tree, cherries and apples in the understory, you know, crab apples and wild cherries, pin cherries, black cherries, etc. Hazelnuts and wild plum as a shrub component, blackberries and raspberries as cane fruits, grapes as vines, gooseberries and currants as shade-tolerant plants. Obviously, there's a lot of biomass being produced, so there's all kinds of fungus that decay, leaves, branches, wood. And of course, there's green grass growing all around, and animals eat the grass. Now, if you just listen to what I mentioned, every single one of those happens to be marketable or edible in some way, shape, or form. So we can assemble a system that imitates the natural system and manage it through time and harvest our yields from it.
So how does this look? Do you have like rows of like cherry trees, and then in between you have grass where you graze animals, or what does that look like?
Yeah, there's 110 acres of grass on the property. My organic inspectors have a fit because they ask me how many acres of this and how many acres of that, and it's 110 acres of everything.
Okay.
There's 110 acres of hazels, 110 acres of cherries, and some of them are in discrete rows that there'll be, you know, apples in this row and then hazelnuts in that row or chestnuts in this row and so on. Some are in discrete rows and some are mixed within the row. And you got to understand, too, that 25 years ago, there was only one book that had been published about permaculture at all. There was no such thing as an internet. And so there was a lot of experimentation that I did with row configuration, planting within the row, et cetera. So you'll see it looks like a lot of rows that are arranged. They look like they're on contour, but they're slightly off contour. And it's designed to spread out flash flood events so the water disperses instead of concentrating in the valleys and flooding downstream.
What brought you to this point? How did you take this turn in your life toward this kind of agriculture?
Wow, way back, a long time ago now, when I was probably 17 or 18 years old, I grew up on a family homestead, a suburban homestead. My parents were both displaced farm kids, you know, that had their parents had to find work in the factories. And so they had big gardens during the oil embargo years of 1974 or so. You know, I came to the realization, like, oh my gosh, our whole entire family culture and a whole entire country is critically dependent on fossil fuels. We've got to figure out a way to live without these fossil fuels. And then because we were also, I'm the smallest of three boys and I'm about 240 pounds. My brothers are bigger than me. So we ate a lot. And in order to keep up with all the food, we had this garden. And my dad probably was the largest gardener in our neighborhood, almost an acre of gardens. And I'd be out there slaving away and making compost and pulling weeds. And all that we would really come up with is like some tomatoes and peppers, a couple of carrots. You know, it was not like the food that fed us. We still went to the grocery store. Well, then after I was done working in the garden, I'd go walk in the woods and I'd harvest grapes and blueberries and, you know, and cherries and hazelnuts. I was looking for a wild chestnut to survive the blight. And it's like, wait a minute, I'm getting just as much food from the woods as I am from the garden. And it's a heck of a lot less work. Well, why can't we take some of the principles of the farm and the garden and move it into the woods? And why can't we take some of the principles of the forest and move it out into the you know, agricultural land and have the best of both worlds? And that's when I ran into a book written in 1926 by J. Russell Smith called Tree Crops, where he talks about exactly that. And that led me down the rabbit hole to eventually find agroforestry and permaculture.
I don't know how you define success, but is there something in your farm that has been, you know, surprisingly successful?
Well, actually, that's interesting about the term success. A reporter was asking me once, you know, to what do I attribute my success? And I scratched my head. It's like, success? What are you talking about? And she said, well, the average organic market gardener lasts for about 4 years and then they quit. You've been here 25. So there's obviously some degree of success. I think that if you were to call anything a success, it's the fact that it's still going on and still doing well, would be alley cropping, which is you grow whatever your crops are, whether it's pasture or you know, annual crops or perennial crops, in between rows of trees. So as you establish your trees, chestnuts, for example, grow something on the ground that you can actually earn money from. And probably over time, the longest, best-paying crop in the alley cropping system has been asparagus. You know, shoot, if I could get up in the morning and pick 40 acres of asparagus, that would be, I'd plant 40 acres of asparagus. It's still there. It's 25-year-old patch and still going strong.
Oh, wow. Yes, asparagus is amazing. You're going to be talking about restoration agriculture in this area at Iron Range Earth Fest, USDA Zone 3A. What do you expect that's going to look like to you?
I have to laugh a little bit. I'm not laughing at you or trying to tease or anything like that. But once I graduated from college, I stuck out my thumb and I hitchhiked up to this place called Alaska. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's a little bit further north from here. Well, then instead of just hanging out in Anchorage, I was out 300 miles northeast of Anchorage, about 400 or 500 feet below tree line. So it was Arctic, 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 and that's where I cut my teeth, learning that, oh my goodness, you can imitate the natural plant community, and these plants will survive. So if you can imagine what hunter-gatherers would have eaten around, you know, Bemidji or wherever we're going to be, and then if you can imagine what modern-day foragers go looking for, well, if you were to take all of the things that the hunter-gatherers and the foragers look for, plant them where you know where they are. And that now you've got a system that's almost a natural system because it's based on the natural plants and animals of the area. It's just heavily weighted. And if we were to use asparagus as an example, instead of like one sprig here and there on the side of the road where people drive up and down the roads looking for wild asparagus around here, I've got a 2-acre patch surrounded by trees, shrubs, bushes, and vines that are also producing fruit from chestnuts to mulberries to grapes to raspberries and so on, elderberries. What it would look like in a zone, USDA Zone 3, is a lot like the brush on the side of the road, except it would be a lot more consciously chosen, a lot more intentionally designed.
Is it hard for people who farm traditionally to kind of switch it up in this direction?
Well, using the agroforestry techniques, that's why I mentioned that first. That's kind of like the transitional phase. It's pretty simple to look out at a field and say, that's wheat and that's hay. And so we go ahead and we plant the row of trees between those two fields. Most people can understand that. And then if we call it something harmless like a windbreak to prevent wind damage out in your grain crop, people can understand that. And so that's the transitional pathways by doing these alley cropping systems or silvopasture, is plant rows of trees along your permanent fence for a grazing system, and eventually you'll have both trees and livestock. If you want to get really ecological and three-dimensional and have like 7 different perennial plants and, you know, 5 different types of livestock, you can go that route, or you can just do it simply and have, you know, your current cropping system with rows of crop trees between.
Have you ever tried something that didn't work?
All the time. That's the whole point. That's the whole point. Think about this. When the apple orchard, because I talked about apples before, originally I had over 219 different named varieties of apples. And so then I treated them. I took care of them with my trademark management technique called STUN, which is strategic total utter neglect. And I think everybody can neglect things, right? So you go out and you plant these plants, and the ones that die, good riddance, they're gone. So you could call that a failure from an apple orchardist's point of view, but I call that a success because I know which ones don't like the soil here. I know which ones can't survive the hot, the cold, the drought, the clay, the whatever it is. The ones that survive are doing quite well here. Thank you very much. Then I go ahead and I plant more of those. So failure points to the success.
You're going to be talking about restoration agriculture in USDA Zone 3A, and you're going to be hosting a workshop on restoring Iron Range farmland to feed ourselves, and then you're doing a roundtable with area farmers and growers. So that looks like it's going to be a great event, and we're looking forward to seeing you at the Earth Fest.
Well, I look forward to seeing you there, and if anyone wants to like have the hardcore, you know, gloves off, design it on the ground, nuts and bolts, that's the Friday night session, the 3-hour session. We'll really go into detail on that.
All right. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, thanks for having me on.
That's Mark Shepherd. You can meet him at the 11th Annual Iron Range Earth Fest in Mountain Iron on April 12th and 13th. And for more information about the Earth Fest, you can visit the Iron Range Partnership for Sustainability website at irpsmn.org.